This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast. Broadcasting to the entire world, live, right now from Mandeville, Louisiana. And boy, I just got back from the building supply store. Again, it's just an incredible job repairing after these natural, they are nasty disasters. I started to say nasty disasters. These natural disasters. Like hurricanes or tornadoes or whatever, earthquakes. Thank goodness we don't have earthquakes down in Louisiana, as they do in some parts of the United States and other parts of the world. It seems like every place around the world has something. The only thing that I know of in the Alps, I love the Alps very much, and the Rockies, they don't have too many earthquakes, but they have snow slides or avalanches. They have mudslides sometimes. But still, I think the worst, I think the most destructive possible killer is earthquakes. But the close second, obviously, is tsunamis, which are born from earthquakes. And but then a third, but a very powerful third, I think, is the hurricane. Hurricanes are incredible, especially when they're Category 5 or above. They can go to over 150 or 60 or 70 miles per hour, sometimes up to 300 kilometers per hour. It's almost like a tornado that's 300 miles across. They're just incredible. And the storm surge, the water they bring with them is just devastating and destructive. Thank goodness I didn't have any storm surge hitting our facilities here, but we did have some water in my old family house, and we certainly had some very serious wind damage and tree damage. And we had some wonderful volunteers. I hope we'll get some pictures up of the individuals who worked to get our place back in shape. It's still not finished. We might do a little more work this weekend. And I want to give a big thank you to all those people who worked and those who are listening who worked on my place. I tell you, I appreciate it very deeply, and it's enabling me to go back to the work that I do the best in a much faster fashion. So thank you so much. We've got a lot going on today, as always, and I've gotten a lot of response from yesterday's show. So if you haven't heard yesterday's program yet, I would really strongly suggest you take a listen, because the program deals with Scooter Libby. That's his nickname. Sounds like some Midwestern blonde-haired, freckle-faced Huckleberry Finn kind of a guy, doesn't it? Scooter Libby. But Scooter Libby is, you know, he is a Jewish supremacist, a loyalist to Israel overall. And this individual committed treason against the United States of America by apparently being part of the apparatus which outed or revealed or exposed a CIA agent's identity. It was an act against the United States, and this came right out of the Bush administration because of the fact the CIA agent's identity was exposed because she was, in fact, the wife of an individual, Ambassador Wilson, who exposed a lot of the lies of the Iraq War. Now, that just shows you how totally bankrupt morally is our president and this administration and the neocon bosses that seem to control the American government and control American foreign policy. You know, in pursuit of their pro-Israel war, to attack anyone who dared to disagree with this anti-American, pro-Israel war, they were even willing to compromise an agent of this country, an intelligence agent of this country. Now, that is a criminal act, and I hope the individuals involved will be prosecuted to the fullest. Absolutely. We got a few posts here on stormfront.org, and by the way, you can get in your emails to me at info44@davidduke.com. I've got a bit of a cough. I've been breathing dust and dirt and the rest of it for a few days now, it seems. So I've got a little bit of a cough, so occasionally I'll try to hit the mute button and cough. You know, I hit the mute button, but I think I'm still recording. I'm not sure. Anyway, so I tried the mute button there. It actually still comes up on the on my recording system. I have a recording system so I can archive the program, but I think maybe the broadcast cough doesn't go out. This is from Kushnet. He says, he's talking about Chertoff. He says, Chertoff, who, by the way, is the head of Homeland Security, and I want to give you a frame of reference, and I want to repeat this again and again and again. It's really quite amazing stuff. Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security, had close ties with a man, Magdu Elamir, suspected of financing the 9/11 attack, and in fact, the original attack on the Trade Center of 1993. Chertoff served as the U.S. attorney in the Newark, New Jersey area during the time of the first Trade Center bombing, so he was certainly very familiar with the FBI investigation into the mosque in that area, the financing of that mosque, and the plot to blow up the Trade Center that existed from that mosque. He had to know Magdu Elamir and the other financiers, who was also a member of that mosque, was certainly guilty, or certainly a suspect in that entire bombing case. Now, 6 years after he left the U.S. Attorney's office, he took Magdu Elamir on as a client. That's right, a client. And Magdu Elamir has been targeted. And during this period, it was suspected that Elamir was, in fact, getting involved in, believe it or not, supplying terrorist organization with arms. In fact, there was a ATF sting operation against Elamir and his brother and a few others, and his brother went down for it. Elamir somehow escaped. You know how he escaped? Well, when Chertoff was appointed to the head of the terrorism task force, the head of the criminal division of the Justice Department, and he became in charge of this purview, suddenly Magdu Elamir skated. And why did he skate? Well, of course, he couldn't afford a man to be on trial who was his client before, and when he wanted to become the head of Homeland Security. Now, again, ladies and gentlemen, what I'm saying here is not some sort of speculation. The head of the United States House of Representatives Intelligence Committee investigating 9/11 said specifically, Mr. Gilman from New York, said specifically that Magdu Elamir is suspected to be the financier of 9/11. So isn't this an amazing world we live in? The financier of 9/11 has close ties with a man who became head of Homeland Security. If that doesn't seem a little odd, and besides all that, Chertoff is, and I think by Israeli law anyway, an Israeli citizen. His mother was an Israeli. His father is a rabbi. He is a very dyed-in-the-wool Jewish supremacist extremist. There's no question about that fact. Chertoff has been an ardent Zionist all of his life. And as I've talked about many times on this program and on my website, there are incredible links between the 9/11 attacks and the Israeli Mossad. I'm not saying the Israeli Mossad agents flew those planes. I don't think they're quite that brave. They'd rather drop bombs and plane and rockets on defenseless civilians while they're up in the helicopters, or they're up in the F-16 fighters. But the interesting thing is that there's a great deal of evidence that the Israelis knew beforehand the nature of this attack. They were shadowing Mohammed Atta, the leader of these terrorists, for weeks before the attack. In fact, they say that that half of the members of the hijacked team were being followed by the Mossad. They were monitoring their phones. They lived, five Israeli agents lived on the same block in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, as Muhammad Atta. Five lived in the same block, same neighborhood as Muhammad Atta. This is revealed by DEA memos. We caught five Israelis on a rooftop filming the 9/11 attacks and cheering those attacks. Yes, we did, ladies and gentlemen. The FBI nabbed them, and they were in prison and for many months held in custody, and they flunked lie detector test after lie detector test after lie detector test. But when Chertoff came in, he basically let these people quietly go home, also outside the reach of 9/11 investigators. Of course, there's many other factors in this whole case. It's amazing. There were certainly warning messages sent to Israeli firms who had offices in the World Trade Center. So there's a lot of links, ladies and gentlemen, between Israel and this attack. I'm not saying necessarily Israel planned the attack, but sometimes I tend to think that Israel at least shepherded the attack, and I would not be surprised if Israeli Mossad agents planted these ideas and helped shepherd this attack from the beginning, because I believe Al-Qaeda has been infiltrated by Israel for a long time. So I'm going to go back to this article. He says, Chertoff may well be carrying an Israeli passport or may not have renounced the automatic right of return to Israel. In either case, he's a dual national, and that should be unacceptable for a top U.S. security post. Chertoff holds one of the top national security posts in America. These posts have different requirements than being a bus driver for the city of Washington, D.C. They require 100% allegiance to the United States. And this, again, is from Acushnet. Because of the vetting of Chertoff was so devoid of any due diligence or criticality, nobody can say, one, if he holds an Israeli passport, two, whether he has renounced the right of return to Israel, or three, whether he's a descendant or linked to the Jewish-Russian mob, Zog, or Bolshevik network. Positions such as A, Director of National Intelligence, Head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Head of the FBI, or Director of Homeland Security are totally different than any other position in the U.S. government. These national security posts should only be held by those that are, one, born in the United States, have served in the U.S. military, three, have a clear family background back to a critical era of American history. A good choice for the latter is Washington's Continental Army. Further, they cannot have presided over any fiascos. These qualifications can be termed blood and two, iron and three, success. Chertoff is unacceptable on all three counts, even before adding the meaningless vetting charade that the Senate performed. If Chertoff holds an Israeli passport, if he's not renounced the right of return, this is as good as having a top Mossad agent running a national, critical national security position. It turns Larry Franklin's conviction for being an Israeli spy into a meaningless puppet show. As the Reverend Jimmy Jones once said, "Here, kid, try this Kool-Aid." How dumb must the world think Americans are? Interesting. And this is an interesting note here as well on stormfront.org. And by the way, you can post your comments. We've had well over 800,000 views on this thread. So it's a great idea that you can get your ideas presented. And they're often controversial. And some I agree, some I don't agree with. But I will certainly share them with our audience, especially those that are well written. This is from Thor9999. And you could also use a pen name if you like, gentlemen, because it's easier for me to do it this way. Dear Dr. Duke, in your discussion yesterday about dollars spent on the Iraq war could be better spent at home, while this is certainly true, there is another, perhaps more important issue involved here, known in economics literature as the fallacy of the broken window. This involves the false notion that spending to fix things that have been destroyed somehow stimulates the economy and creates jobs and therefore is a net positive for the economy. If a kid breaks a window with a baseball, this might stimulate sales for a glass vendor, but the homeowner could have made better use of his money if the window had not been broken, such as by investing funds in more productive equipment for his business. A broken window also creates opportunity costs. The time the homeowner spent fixing the window could have been that much better spent studying computer software that would make his business more productive. In addition, the overall economy would have been better off adding more productive equipment rather than spending time and resources to replace broken glass. Of course, all this is my comment. Of course, all this is on the condition that, you know, I agree that, you know, but of course, when a glass is broken in someone's home, he does have to spend the time to correct it. But if you spend money doing that, and he spends money on his home in America, it's certainly more beneficial to the American economy than someone spending his money on some home in Croatia or Russia or Germany or Israel or Rwanda or wherever. Okay, I'm going back to his letter. Ever since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, real economic progress comes from investing money and attention in equipment that produces higher quality tradable goods that can be purchased at increasingly lower cost by consumers. In contrast, spending on war results in things that tend to get blown up, wasted, or ultimately mothballed after the war is over. Rather than productive manufacturing equipment and infrastructure that increases productivity over the years ahead. Research studies show that war expenditures tend to heavily skew and even cannibalize research and development investment and infrastructure that has been developed in peacetime rather than create sustainable economic progress. As an example, while we are diverting time and resources for destructive purposes in Iraq, the Japanese and other foreigners are quietly perfecting increasingly intelligent humanoid robots. Wait and see how much we may have to bow and scrape if foreigners can produce millions of robots with near-human intelligence in 15 to 20 years, and we have nothing that can match this. Much of the academic background for what I discussed here can be found in the brilliant book Economics in One Lesson by the famous writer Harry Hazlitt and the lecture What Survives and What Dies During War by Dr. Mark Thornton at the Mises Institute and at Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S. The broken window analogy originated with the 19th century economist named Frederick Bastiat. Okay, good. Interesting letter, and I agree fundamentally with what you've said there. David Fellows writes, "The full video of the Black Media Forum on C-SPAN is rather long, so here are links to Camus Cambon's speech where he calls for the extermination of white people off the face of the planet." Now, by the way, anybody listening anywhere on the web or simply just connected directly to the show can go to stormfront.org town hall section and get these links. And you should listen to these links of the forum, the Black Forum that was produced in Washington, D.C. at a major university there, where black speakers literally called for the extermination of the white people in this country. Okay, let me go on with David Fellows' letter. Brother Camus Cambon speaks out on the Black Media Forum on C-SPAN. They quote, "White people want to kill you, black people. The only solution I can come up with is extermination of white people off the face of the earth." Mr. Cambon blames white people for polluting the planet and corrupting his people, but forgets that his people have a choice. Do white people insist black people take drugs, get involved in violent crime, overeat, or waste their money on jewelry, flash cars, or the like? Flashy cars? No, blacks do all these things out of free choice. Their lifestyles, music, and general behavior are often at odds with white society. It is frequently unpleasant, unsavory, and we should not have to put up with it. I applaud this man's veg and diet and his use of American free speech laws, but aside from that, I can only conclude that he's a racist. Sure, there are problems with white society, but equally there are problems with black people too. He needs to put aside his racism and learn to be positive and constructive. He needs to learn that cooperation and understanding rather than hate and racism are the only way forward. Anyway, that's a little letter there. This is Reiman. He quotes from an earlier post. He said, "I just got finished watching a pro-black, all-black conference on C-SPAN in preparation for the so-called Million Man March. It featured speaker after speaker spewing hatred toward our white race and blaming every failure they've had on the white race. The one that took the cake was some highly esteemed black author who went on a rant and ended his entire speech with a call to all blacks to accept the fact that the white race needs to be removed from the face of the planet. He actually said it and said it loud and proud, and the whole place applauded him. This was on C-SPAN national TV, my friends. I just wanted to destroy my television. I had visions of my children being slaughtered by blacks. I couldn't believe it. This is mainstream black talk, not some underground local cable TV show." This is from Nordic Wise. He says, "Oh yeah, This is some Traven, actually, Nordic-wise. Oh, yeah, I just saw the Kanban video. Wow, do you believe this? The obvious response is, drum roll, please. What if a white man said this? You wouldn't hear the end of it. For God's sakes, when are the rest of us going to wake up? You know, that guy is a moron. And we've got a couple of things here. So there's some pretty good responses, and it is interesting. And I think it's always good for us to contrast how the media treats minorities who say things about white people, such as, you know, genocidal things like that, and white people who simply talk about the realities of, say, black crime or massive immigration and how that's displacing the white people, or are punishing black criminals, for that matter, those who commit crimes against either blacks or whites. They're called racist in names, but if a person gets up who is of non-white descent and literally calls for the genocide of our people, that's okay. That's just one more day in the salt mines, ladies and gentlemen, just one more day in the salt mines. James M. says that there's more pressure looming for war against Syria. And I tell you, Syria is a pretty doggone nice country. It's a beautiful country. They have a whole section, in fact, of Damascus, of Greek descent. And the people are actually blondes. They're like the original. I think they're more Greek than some of the Greeks now in Greece. Many blondes, beautiful people. The Assyrians are the descendants. Of the Assyrians, which were an Aryan people. And there may have been some mixing, certainly, over the years, but there are many Assyrians who are very, very European in looks and everything. There are some dark, like there are in some of the Eastern countries. Just like in South America, you've got a segment of European people, then you have a large segment of mixed, and a segment of very dark. But Syria is really one of the whiter countries over there, and it's pretty amazing how clean and decent. It's a pretty poor country, but it's really amazing how clean and nice this country is. I mean, and of course their big offense has been they've dared to stand up against the supremacism and the evil policies and programs of Israel. Oh, this is a nice guy. You know, we get so more of these, you know, these idiots. This is from who knows whom. It's Stephen T. Smith in Florida. I don't know where he is, but I'll give you that name. It's all about the Jews. Go figure, coming from you. It's hard to believe a man with a PhD after his name can be so completely and utterly stupid. But book smarts don't come much without any other smarts. You could leave the country, You could take Cindy Sheehan and Michael Moore with you. We could only hope, without any respect. Stephen Smith from Florida. Well, Stephen, you know, that's just invective. You couldn't really argue, obviously, with the thing that I said. And that's typical of those kinds of people who want to criticize me or throw, you know, call me names. What I say is fundamentally correct. I can prove it. And this is probably one of those guys who's anti-quote racist, you know, anti-quote supremacist, and yet he has totally blind eyes when it comes to Jewish supremacism. Now, there's obviously many things I disagree with Cindy Sheehan on. And in fact, she's kind of, you know, attacked me recently. And Michael Moore, for that matter. Michael Moore is a complete idiot. But because we might agree on one issue doesn't make me invalid or my issues invalid. I mean, that's just logic. You know, since Michael Moore advocates the use of toilet paper, you know, should I not advocate the use of individuals to use toilet paper? You see what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen? You know, yes, they're, you know, obviously. And of course, that's really one of the typical ways that people argue, and it's a very illogical. I'm glad that when I was in university that I took some courses in logic, because, you know, you don't prove anything is good or bad by showing an individual who believes in that same idea. Okay, I mean, I can show you a lot of idiots. I can show you mass murderers who believe the sky is blue, or believe that George Washington defeated the British at Yorktown, and maybe not earlier in terms of other his perseverance, or has some sort of historical or political or social or religious opinion. That certainly doesn't make that person's opinion invalid because some individual who's less than stellar has that opinion. But that's the kind of logic that people like Steve Smith uses, and he's calling me completely and utterly stupid. Because Cindy Sheehan is opposed to the war, and Michael Moore is opposed to the war, and both these individuals have certain aspects about them which we might not particularly care for. You know, it certainly doesn't make my position against the war invalid. And by the way, my position sharply diverges from Cindy Sheehan's and Michael Moore's. I am against this war because solely, and also I would have to say, in a sense of humanitarianism and in a sense of justice, but my biggest opposition to this war is that I'm a patriotic American. I believe that our American policies in Iraq or anywhere else in the world should be those that serve the American people and the American interest. And I don't think it serves our interest to get thousands and thousands of our young men and women, in fact, today, maimed or crippled or blinded or disfigured or in terrible pain, and the billions and billions of dollars of cost from this adventure. I don't think it's patriotic to go into this war and have these men and women die for a lie. And I think this is pretty logical. You know, as you know, this war has done nothing but harm this country in all the most important ways, including, again, almost 2,000 now of our young men and women who've been killed in this conflict. So, there you go. This is from James M. He says, urgent. He says, Condi Rice, and let's go ahead and use her whole name. I think that's so powerful because it really reflects on exactly how it really is. Condoleezza Rice just mentioned on CNN in front of Senate Foreign Relations Committee that force against Syria would not be ruled out. And of course, that is the next step of a clean break coming up sooner than later. And of course, a clean break, a new strategy for securing the realm, is that paper written by people like Richard Perle and Douglas Feith and Elliot Worm, I think Mr. Wormser, and written for Benjamin Netanyahu. They're radical Jewish supremacists in Israel. This is from Edward, and he says, David, still reading your stuff. Hope your repairs go well. Would help if I lived in the area. And let me know if you're ever in Ohio. All the best, Ed. Well, thank you, Ed, and thanks to all the people out there who are listening, and also those wonderful volunteers who've come down and helped with this very, very important project, a project that enables me to do the work that I've got to do. And I've got to get back to some of my speaking, obviously, because there are people filling in for me. Ladies and gentlemen, by the way, I've got to get back to work. I've got to make some preparations here. I'm getting ready to get the roof fixed here in my living room. We've got the other place, 85% fixed. We still got a lot of little things to do. So I've got to get off and go join our people. I've got to make another run of some more materials for our good helpers and laborers. And by the way, everybody that's working on our property is, European American through and through, ladies and gentlemen. No Mexican labor on my place. No illegal aliens. This is definitely a European operation. And it's not that I object to Mexicans working, especially in Mexico, our blacks working. I mean, they've got every right to work. And in fact, we want them to work and not be in the welfare system, absolutely. But it's really nice to have people, working with me who are of my own heritage and my own values, and I know that they're going to do the job right. One of the men that we have working in this project is a man by the name of Robert Moore. He's, by the way, very capable on computers as well. He's extremely capable. He started his own construction business, and he's been donating his time to come out and help with this project. And Robert, I can tell you something. Robert is an example of the kind of people that we have to have in this movement, men that really go out there and lay it on the line. And by the way, James Kelso has been working so hard over the last two or three months. He's been living out there and trying to take care of the place and get the trees off. He did a great job, and I'm very thankful to James. And I think James is going to do a lot of great things in this movement. He's only been in the movement really about two or three years, but he has a lot of knowledge. He's very, very active, primarily on Stormfront today. He does a few things for me, but he's going to have a great career, I think, in terms of motivating people and educating people and organizing people. And he's certainly done a great job in terms of the work he's done. But going back to Robert, I just wanted to tell you about this gentleman. He is a contractor, and anybody in the Louisiana area or Mississippi that needs some work done, he's ready to do it, and he'll give you a very good price. And he's going to have his crew will be all European American, and he just does a great job. You know, one thing that I like about people, I like people that really own a job or own a task. They take personal responsibility. They go out and do the task, and that's the way Robert's been. He's one of these guys that says, "I'm going to do this job," and he's not trying to do it half-ass. He's not trying to just do the least he can and get out of there. He wants to make sure things are right. He not only wants to make sure that the bathtub is in there right, but it's not going to mess up the electrical system so somebody gets electric in the bathtub. But he's going to make sure he goes to the nth degree to make sure that things are done right. Another individual who really helped us in the patriotic American Patriot painting is the gentleman who came over from Texas. And I'm going to do some promotion of him. He did a fantastic job. He laid tile and he worked to make sure everything was done right. He owned the job. He and Robert just owned the job. And Robert's taking the responsibility, and soon I'm going to have to go back to my speaking around the world and my work and some of my teaching in Eastern Europe. And it's really good to know that Robert will take responsibility and the things that need to be done, that he will own it as his own. He'll treat this property like it's his own property and make sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it. Let me give you one more refresh on the Stormfront. Okay, I think that's it. I got a couple more emails, but I'm going to have to cover them tomorrow. I've got to get back to work and get some more items. Thank you so much, all of you, for being with me. I hope you've learned a little bit today, and I hope that you'll continue to find this show very educational, up to date on the current events. I hope I'm giving you some good background on the current events that are so important to our people in so many ways. Well, until tomorrow, this has been David Duke, and I tell you, God bless and take care, and let's continue to get this material out to our people. Thanks. Bye-bye.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.